Good morning. This got to come up. There we go. As Steve mentioned earlier in the welcome, we're going to be talking about the coming year this week, and we're actually going to be doing that this week and next week both. This week, I'm going to focus on our new theme for the year, and then next week, we're going to talk about some things that we're going to be doing together as we go through 2016. You may have noticed as you came through the lobby that the theme, or on the coffee table over there, the theme for this year is awake, and we'll introduce that topic today and share what I'm talking about when I say awake, and we'll take it from there. My dog Max loves me more than anything in the world. He loves me unreasonably. More than I deserve. You know, he's my shadow. He whines if he's shut out of the room I'm in. And if I'm there, he really doesn't pay very much attention to anybody else. Now, if somebody's petting him, he'll you know, give them their attention. And he does love Julia, and he loves Sue. And that's a growing relationship there. And was never really a dog person, but Max has kind of won her heart. He likes the boys less than the rest of us. But even if someone's there giving him attention, if I walk in, and especially if I say his name, it's like, boom, he's gone. And he comes to me. He's a Sheltie. He has beautiful, long, fluffy hair, which he leaves all over the house. And it's one of the reasons why he has to have a growing relationship with Sue. He's a herding dog. He tries to keep Julia from leaving the house every morning. He nips at her legs and tries to not let her go out the door. And he is actually brilliant in some ways. He knows how to come and sit and stay. And back in the days when we used his crate, I could just say, get in your crate. And from wherever he was, he would go and get right in his crate. He might not stay long, but he knew what getting the crate meant. And so he's really smart in some ways. In other ways, he is as dumb as a brick. There are some things, in some ways, I just think, bless your heart, you know, you're really stupid. he has some weird habits, and I'll tell you about one of them. He comes into my office, you know, silently. And he lays down right behind my desk chair. And I don't know he's there, but that's where he gets all the time. And I'll be working, and I get done, and I stand up, and I roll back, and I roll over him. And I'm not, like, all the way over him, but, that you know, I'm just working, I'm in a different world, and I start scooting back, and I was like, "Rawr!" I was like, oh, what? You know, and I look back, and there's always a little tuft of hair laying there where one of the wheels, like, pulls some of his hair out. And I can't tell you how many times he's done that. And he still does it. I guess I can't learn to, you know, not to roll back without looking behind me either. But it's like, I don't care how many times that happens, he cannot learn a lesson. He also has this strange habit of when he goes outside and when he's coming back in, I say, go in. He will not walk on the last 2 or 3 feet of the sidewalk leading up to our porch. He'll come and he'll run right down the sidewalk, and he gets to the end and he diverts. He goes off into the grass, back around, hops up on the steps, and goes in the house. And I don't even know when this started, and I don't know what started it. I mean, did something really, really bad happen in the last 2 feet of the sidewalk that he just can't go there anymore? I don't know, but one day I went outside and I said, I'm going to test this. And he's in the yard, and I said, okay, let's go in. And I stood right where he gets off the sidewalk every time. And he's kind of walking along, and he comes, and he goes off the sidewalk, and I'm standing there, and he looks at me like, what are you doing in my spot? And I said, go in the house. And he looked at me kind of like, he was looking at me as if to say, you know good and well, I can't do that. You're standing in my spot. And finally, I had to kind of push him around me, but I tried it again, and next time, he just waited until I moved. And then he went in the house. And, you know, he's fiercely loyal, very loving, smart in some ways, and in other ways, there's just this block where he can't learn a lesson and he can't break out of these habits that he gets into. And I think maybe sometimes, you know, God gives us our pets to show us little things about ourselves, right? I think we can be that way sometimes. In some ways, we can be brilliant. In other ways, maybe God looks at us and says, you know, I love you, and I know you love me above all, but man, there's these things, these habits you have that are just kind of weird, and you seem stuck there, and you can't get out of it. But, you know, God wants to help us live full, abundant, joyful lives and help us break out of maybe some patterns that we've developed that keep us from experiencing life, full life, abundant life, the eternal kind of life that we were created to live. In Ephesians chapter 5, starting in verse 8, it says, for once you were darkness, but now in the Lord you are light. You were once darkness. He didn't say here, as it does in other scriptures, like in 1 John, it talks about sometimes we're in the dark and we have an invitation to come into the light. He says, no, you were darkness, but now in the Lord you are light. Live as children of light. For the fruit of the light is found in all that is good and right and true. Try to find out what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to mention what such people do secretly, but everything exposed by the light becomes visible. For everything that becomes visible is light. Therefore, it says, sleeper, awake. Rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Here, Paul is writing to these Christians that live in the city called Ephesus, and he says, you know, because you're in the Lord, you once were darkness, but now you're light. Earlier in this letter, in chapter 2, he says it maybe even stronger. He says, once you were dead in transgressions and sins, but now you're alive. I think a lot of times we think about, because of our relationship with God, we think, I was lost, I was condemned, but now I'm forgiven. And that's true, and that's something to celebrate. But here, these passages say, it's so much deeper than that. It's so much deeper than being guilty and condemned and now being forgiven. You're not just forgiven, it's more profound than that. It was, you were darkness, and now you're light. You were blind, but now you see. You were darkness, But now you're light. You were dead, but now you're alive. And you're alive in this different sort of life, this different quality of life, a kind of life that we were dead to before, but now we've come alive to it. You know, Max knows how to come and sit and stay and fetch and get in his crate. He's a herding dog. He's got these instincts that are just in his DNA so that he acts in certain ways. But there's other kinds of living that he just can't access. Many things. One, like learning a lesson of how painful it is to lay down on the back wheels of Dad's office chair. And he just does that over and over again. But here we can talk about life and death, but this is talking about a different kind of life. And there are different kinds of life. We understand that. You know, we think about plants. I always like to talk about grass. Like, grass is what used to be in our front yard when the house was built 25 years ago. There used to be grass, and now it's not that there's not grass, it's just that there's not live grass. And there's a big difference between dead grass and live grass. See, live grass is alive to the world of sun and water and soil, and it knows about like growing and being things like green, which dead grass doesn't know about. Live grass is so healthy that it might even choke out weeds a little bit. Dead grass makes way for the weeds, which is sort of good because there wouldn't be anything green in our yard if it weren't for the weeds. But there's a big difference between dead grass and live grass. But even live grass is not alive to the world of sit and stay and come and I love you more than you deserve, the way Max is. But there are these other realms of life that Max is dead to. You know, one of our family traditions, and it means more to some of us than others, but on Thanksgiving, we would watch the parades, some of us. Sue's a big parade person. I'm not a parade person. But it's on, and we're there, and we're having a good time as a family, and some people actually watch the parade. And then after that, it's the National Dog Show, right? And we would watch that, and of course, we're waiting for the Sheltie and to come, and we're rooting for the Sheltie, and we try to make Max watch the dog show. We think, surely, if anybody in the family would be interested in the National Dog Show, it would be Max. But the truth is, for Max, there are just things in the room. There's me, and then there are things. There's a light switch. There's a fireplace, there's a TV that kind of looks like it's moving, and then there's a couch and a lamp. And we say, look at the TV, look. It's the Sheltie, root for him. And he doesn't watch the Sheltie, he's not interested in the whole herding group. Even though he's one of them, he's dead to that world. He's a living creature, and he knows how to sit and stay and come and get in the crate, but he knows nothing about dog shows or poetry or mathematics. He's completely dead to that world. But see, we can be alive to the world of dog shows and poetry and mathematics and be completely dead to this different kind of life, this spiritual life, this life as children of light. And this is not something that we can conjure up on our own. becoming, making that transition from blind to one who sees, the transition from someone who's just sleepwalking to one who's wide awake, that transition from being dead to the spiritual world to coming alive, to living resurrection life, that's God work. That's something God does in us. God changes us from the inside. God calls us out of the tombs that we live in. That's why it says, as Paul says, "Awake, sleeper, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you." So as we focus on the theme of awake this year, we're going to be talking about what it means and what it looks like to live as children of light. You know, what can we say about these children of light that Paul's talking about here? How can we describe them? You know, it's a challenge to describe the inner life. But that's really where this change takes place, is in the inner life, in our souls. Children of light is another way of saying children of God. 1 John 1 verse 5 says, "God is light. In him there is no darkness at all." So these children of light have the nature of light, the way that all parents pass on their nature to their children. You know, and for us, that's for good and for bad. We pass our natures on. We pass our DNA along to our children. And God being light, when God makes us alive, and we are born again, and we become children of light, God passes on God's character to us. We're not perfect, and we don't live in a perfect world, but we're changed. And the difference in a child of light, or someone who is light versus someone who is darkness, is not a pose that they strike in certain situations. It's not knowing how to act when I go to church or in whatever other situation there might be that you think, well, I need to clean up my act here because I'm wherever it is. It's not even primarily things you do or don't do, although behavior certainly changes significantly. But it's more about a change that's on the inside. Primarily and most importantly, there's a change on the inside, in the inner life, in the depths of our souls. And it comes from an awakening brought about by God. And that's what we're going to be focusing on this year, is what it means to be awake, what it means to respond to God's invitation that says, "Sleeper, awake! And Christ will shine on you." We can talk about, we'll go on to talk about different aspects of this life, of living wide awake. Things like our thought life. And the children of light, in their thought life, most basically, they think about God. God is never completely out of their minds and never far from center in their minds. We can talk about relationships and how they're different. Relationships that are transparent and honest and open. Like in that first song we sang, you know, nothing here is hidden. To you, our hearts are open. We're like that with God, and we're learning to be like that with each other. Nothing here is hidden. Relationships are different in the light. because of our confidence in God, we never try to manipulate or control other people. We don't go on the attack or try to punish people by withdrawing from them. We're learning to be completely present with people the way Jesus was. And to be present with people without participating in darkness, if that's where they are. But we're still there. And so we could go, we'll talk about a number of things and what it looks like to live as children of light, what it looks like for God to wake us up. But make no mistake, the things we're talking about are not a list of things to do. Although there are things to do, but they're not a list of things that the children of light are constantly trying to do, gritting their teeth, forging ahead, gutting it out. Although maybe we can relate to that in some ways, but we're going to talk about features and qualities of life that well up from a life that is at home with God. Life that has been brought about by God. A life that has taken us from only being alive to the things around us, things like, you know, dog shows and poetry and mathematics and getting up and going to work and going to church and, you know, just going through our life and God waking us up to this different world where God is. And living that different kind of life. And the difference is, it's not that, you know what, I used to be a really bad person, but God saved me and now I'm a good person. That may be true, but it's more accurate to say, I was blind, but now I see. I get it. God has opened my eyes. God said, wake up. There's a whole different world here that I want you to get up and live in. The difference is not necessarily activity. I wasn't doing anything, and now, boy, I'm busy. That might be true as well, but that's not what this is about. It's not just about activity. Because you can sleepwalk your way, in a spiritual sense, you can sleepwalk your way through an incredibly hectic, busy schedule, even doing really good things. Doing really good things, but you're still not awake to the life that God wants to bring about in you and in your soul. Jesus talks about this same idea when Jesus was mourning over Jerusalem. It's in Matthew 23, and it's in Luke 14, I believe it is, where Jesus mourns over Jerusalem. But in 23, 27, Jesus says, you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside look beautiful, but inside they're full of the bones of the dead and all kinds of filth. And Jesus uses the tombstone as a metaphor for people that have shut down the reality of life with God and are just going through the religious motions. That's where Jerusalem was. That's where they were stuck. But they're left there going through the emotions with very little energy and no imagination. And he's not describing a cemetery for bodies, but a cemetery for the soul. And he says, you know, where you're stuck is you can dress up and you can look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside, it's just uncleanness. And so being stuck there, they've become markers of a place where there used to be life. But there's not anymore. Rather than being truly alive, they're just moving through the patterns and kind of the twitches of death. They're just going through the motions. They developed habits like Max, always running off the sidewalk because that's just what you do. And I don't even know why, but I get up on Sunday and I come to church and I sing and I take communion and I sort of maybe listen to a message sometimes, and I open my Bible sometimes every once in a while, and I try to pray, and I do these things, but I can't really remember why I do any of that. That's a pretty painful critique of where these people were stuck, but Jesus does not mean it as condemnation. Jesus is mourning. In fact, he goes on to say, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone the ones sent to you, how often have I longed to gather you into me like a mother hen gathers her chicks, but you aren't willing." And there may be some here today are thinking, you know, I'm kind of stuck in that place too, where I'm going through the motions, but it's sometimes hard to remember why I do what I do, and I feel myself just kind of sleepwalking through life, and I'm doing a lot of stuff, and I'm always busy, but I can't find the energy, and I can't find the imagination to see what God is really up to, and how I'm a part of God's big story, and what God wants to do through me, and the difference this is making in me, and the difference that could be made through me, around me, and I feel like I'm alive, but I'm not really alive. I have a job, and I have a family, and I have a marriage, and I have school, and there's all these things going on, but I'm sleepwalking. And life kind of becomes like one of those malls that was built 50 years ago. You know those malls? I remember one of my best memories of life is my dad taking me to buy a baseball glove when I was about 12 years old. And he bought me a baseball glove, and that baseball glove cost $25. I didn't know there was that much money in the world. We were in JCPenney back when JCPenney used to be like a department store. And it had a sporting goods section and a hardware section right next to it. And we went in there, and my dad went to hardware, and he said, "Go over to sporting goods and find a glove that you want." And I went over there, and right away I saw this glove, and I was like, "That is the best glove in the history of mankind." And I picked it up and I put it on, and it was amazing. And then I looked, and the price tag said $25, and I put it down. I was like, there is no way my dad is spending $25 on me. Not realizing that I ate like $1,000 worth of food a month. But I thought, there's no way. And then he ended up buying it for me. And but there was this whole experience back then. You go Eastgate Mall is where it was, and even going to the mall, everything shiny, and it's like has this gleam. And you go, and all the people are there, and they seem to be kind of dressed up a little bit. You know, of course, this is in the early 70s, and it was the new place, and they had really crazy cool stores like JCPenney. And it's kind of like here in Atlanta, you know, think like North Lake Mall, maybe, you know, 50 years ago, that was the place, right? Some of these malls, they had riches. If you're from Atlanta, you know what riches is. Unless you're young, then you don't know nothing about riches. It's like Macy's, but our Macy's, right? And the malls that were built then were gleaming and like the place to be. And you go now, and they're still there, but there's no riches. In fact, it doesn't exist. Now it's more like stores you haven't heard of and nail salons and dollar stores. Like it's still there, but it kind of has death written all over it. And you're a little bit afraid to go there. And I'm afraid we can, you know, and I know this is true for me. Sometimes you can find yourself and say, well, I'm still here. I'm still showing up. But my life kind of has death written all over it. And when God sees people there, when Jesus saw Jerusalem there, when Jesus sees you or me there today, he doesn't get mad. It breaks his heart. He says, do you understand how I long to gather you into me? Who is God? This angry, all-powerful being ready to strike down anyone who doesn't have their act together? Jesus said, here's who God is. God is a mother hen that wants nothing more than to protect you. But sometimes it takes to protect you, to wake you up. What it takes for the sleepers to awake and from the dead to resurrect is looking at where you're stuck. And asking, is this really where I want to be? It's not God's best for you. So sleeper, awake. Rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. But it's not something that we can pull off on our own. This is the same thing that's done by a power. It's done by the Word of God. The way that Jesus called Lazarus out of the tomb. The way that God called Jesus out of the tomb. God is speaking to your soul right now and always. Saying, sleeper, awake. Rise from the dead. And Christ will shine on you. You know, here's the deal. I know my dog Max well enough to know that if I really worked on it, I could train him to look at the TV. Because I know that, you know, that I've trained him to do other things. And if it was really important to me, I could train him to come into the living room and sit there and point his face toward the TV and act like he was watching the National Dog Show. I could do that. It would border on animal cruelty, you know. Because I could make him outwardly do that, but I cannot make him enjoy it. And a lot of times we look for the outward things, like how many quiet times a week do I have to have in order to be pleasing to God? How many minutes a day do I need to pray? How do I need to posture myself in worship? Is it like, do I need to do that, or is this okay? Or is it okay to do what I feel comfortable with, which is this? And, you know, it's not about that posture. It's not about motions you go through. It's about something that's supposed to be happening in here, in your soul. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's good just to do the right thing, even if you don't feel like it. But if that is your life, let me just throw this out. That is not the abundant, full life that God has in mind for you. To live a life of going through the motions and doing what you think is the right thing, even though you don't feel like it. I could train Max to watch the dog show. I can't make him enjoy it. I can teach you some really good principles about how to study the Bible and how to get things out of this. I can't make you enjoy God. I think the place to start, if we find ourselves in this place where we're stuck, where we feel like we're sleepwalking, sometimes what you have to understand is just the power of asking God to wake you up. Asking God to wake you up to the wonder, the power, the brilliance of Jesus. Maybe it starts with just wanting to want it. Just being honest that, you know what, I'm just going through the motions, and this is where I am, and this is, you know, maybe there's more. Maybe it starts with the idea of there's more there. Do I want more? Am I happy with this? Or do I want more? I believe there's a part of every one of us that wants more. Even if you feel like you're doing well right now, you want more. We sang, all to Jesus I surrender, all to him I freely give. I will ever love and trust him. In his presence I will live. Man, I want to go deeper to that place. I don't want to be sleepwalking. I don't want my life to be a tombstone, a marker of a place where life used to be. I want to respond in every way to God's gracious invitation to awake, so that you and I together, we sense, we awake to the wonder and to the goodness of God. We finally awake, or maybe awake again, to how we were created to live. To what it means to be fully human. We awake to a world of possibility where Christ is shining on us. A world and a life where we sense in our hearts what could be and what should be. And we're confident. We're at least awake enough to see how this is a journey and this is a process, but we can see what God has begun to do in us and is bringing about in us and around us and through us, because we responded to his invitation to wake up. Sleeper, awake, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you.